The House will come to order. The joint meeting will come to order.
Sorry. Mr. Speaker, the Vice President and the United States Senate.
The joint meeting will come to order. The chair appoints as members of the committee on the part of the House to escort President Lee into the chamber. The gentleman from Virginia, Mr. Cantor, the gentleman from California, Mr. McCarthy, the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Hensarling, the gentleman from California, Mr. Dreyer, the gentlewoman from Florida, Ms. Ross Leighton, the gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Camp, gentleman from California, Mr. McKeon. Gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Manzullo. Gentleman from California, Mr. Royce. Gentleman from Texas, Mr. Brady. The gentlewoman from Texas, Ms. Granger. The gentleman from Washington, Mr. Reichert. The gentlelady from California, Ms. Pelosi. Gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Hoyer. Gentleman from Connecticut, Mr. Larson. Gentleman from California, Mr. Becerra. Gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Holland. Gentleman from New York, Mr. Rangel. Gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Conyers. Gentleman from New York, Mr. Ackerman. Gentlewoman from California, Ms. Loretta Sanchez. Gentlewoman from Pennsylvania, Ms. Schwartz. Gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Levin. And the gentlewoman from California, Ms. Matsui.
The President of the Senate, at the direction of the body, appoints the following senators, members of the committee on the part of the Senate's court, His Excellency President Lee, President of the Republic of Korea, into the House chamber. Senator from Nevada, Mr. Reed. The Senator from Alaska, Mr. Begich. The Senator from Massachusetts, Mr. Kerry. The Senator from Virginia, Mr. Webb. The Senator from Kentucky, Mr. McConnell. The Senator from Tennessee, Mr. Alexander. The Senator from Wyoming, Mr. Barrasso. The Senator from South Dakota, Mr. Thune. The Senator from Texas, Mr. Cornyn. The Senator from Indiana, Mr. Lugar. and the Senator from Ohio, Mr. Portman.
Members of the Escort Committee shall exit the chamber through the lobby doors.
Mr. Speaker, the Acting Dean of the Diplomatic Corps. Mr. Speaker, the President's Cabinet. Speaker, the President of the Republic of Korea.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you His Excellency Lee Myung-bak, President of the Republic of Korea.
Would you please allow me to speak in Korean, please? 존경하는
Mr. Speaker,
하원의장,
Mr. Vice President, distinguished members of Congress, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great privilege to speak to you from this podium in this great institution representing democracy and freedom. And I am particularly grateful to the leadership of both parties and to all the esteemed members of Congress for their support in ratifying the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement last night in a swift manner. In a swift manner, which I am told was quite unprecedented. I flew halfway around the world to be here today among friends, thinking about and deeply grateful for the friendship between our two countries. for Korea, America is not a distant land. America is our neighbor and our friend. America is our ally and our partner. There is a Korean expression that describes our 60-year partnership. In Korean, 같이 갑시다. In English, it means we go together. Indeed, we have been going together for 60 years. For the last 60 years, remarkable changes took place in both of our countries. For the United States, it has been a journey to new frontiers on this planet and beyond. It has been a journey of achieving fantastic breakthroughs in science and technology, which led to the advent of the information age. It was a journey of developing new cures and making advances in machineries. And throughout this journey, you served as the greatest inspiration for peace and prosperity the world has ever known. For the Republic of Korea, the last 60 years has been an incredible time of transformation and renewal. It was an epic journey from poverty to prosperity, from dictatorship to a thriving democracy, from a hermit nation to a global Korea. And ladies and gentlemen, Korea's story is your story too. And that fact is clear in our capital city of Seoul. During the Korean War, Seoul was almost completely destroyed. Today, however, Seoul is reborn. Where there was once rubble, now stands the Seoul Tower, looking out over a thriving modern metropolis. In the streets where women and children searched the wreckage for fuel, soon vehicles powered by magnetic strips will roam the streets. And Seoul is also the most wired city on the planet. As you can see, Seoul is also one of the most dynamic and cosmopolitan cities in the world. Last year, Seoul was host to the G20 summit, and next March, it will host a second nuclear security summit, which will be attended by more than 50 heads of state and government. To mark the 60th anniversary of the Korean War, we invited American veterans back to see the land they helped liberate. And when they visited Korea, they found very few landmarks that they recognized from the war. Instead, they saw in Korea what you see here and experience in the United States today. The pace and the pulse of modern life, a creative entrepreneurial spirit that knows no bounds, a sense of self-confidence, optimism and pride, and an unshakable faith in freedom, in free elections, a free press and free markets. Oh, and yes, personally, our love for fried chicken. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, these are the values that we share. Your great president and statesman, Thomas Jefferson, said that the only safe place to locate the ultimate powers of the society is in the hands of the people themselves. These same values can be found in Korea too. One of Korea's greatest kings, King Sejong, said approximately 600 years ago that the people are heaven, the will of the people is the will of heaven. Revere the people as you would heaven. Here, an ocean away, in the people's house, these ancient words of our ancestors that calls us to revere our people still ring true. We also share a belief that political freedom and economic freedom must go hand in hand. And during the 1960s, Koreans demanded democracy and freedom. As one of the student leaders who organized protests calling for democracy, I was caught and imprisoned, but this only strengthened my conviction that universal rights such as democracy, dignity of man, and human rights must never be compromised. At the same time, the Korean people yearned for another kind of freedom, freedom from poverty. Back then, Korea's per capita GDP was less than 80 US dollars. University graduates roamed the streets, unable to find a job. Opportunities were scarce, and it was difficult for people to have hope for the future. This is when I realized that even if we had political freedom and democracy, we would not be truly free without economic freedom. So after I was released from prison for my political activities, I joined a small local company. This company, which had less than 100 employees at the time, later evolved into a global conglomerate with over 160,000 employees, and as one of its youngest ever CEOs, I was privileged to be part of Korea's remarkable economic rise as Korea's economy grew into being near the global top 10. Along the way, I was able to escape poverty myself, but being able to contribute to my country's growth will always remain one of my proudest moments. As you can see, we have won the fight to win two very important freedoms, our political freedom and our economic freedom. Very few countries were successful in their quest to win freedom from poverty and freedom from oppression, and Koreans are proud. And they also know that your friendship and our alliance has been indispensable throughout this remarkable journey of hope. And this is why all of you here should be proud of what Korea and the Korean people have achieved. Nevertheless, I still get asked by many foreign leaders, how did a country with no natural resources, no technology, no capital, and no experience manage to achieve so much in just one generation? My answer to them is very simple: the power of education. The Korean War, as I've said, completely destroyed my country. The people had nothing to eat and nothing to wear. For years, we relied on foreign aid. But the Korean people believed in one thing, and that was education. Even if parents had to work day and night and drink nothing but water to chase away their hunger, they spared nothing when it came to their children's education. My parents were the same. They were determined to give their children hope by giving them a chance to learn. And I was determined to learn. I used to be a street vendor, selling anything and everything during the day, and attended night school. After night school, however, going on to college was but a dream. Yet I managed to get in through the help of many others around me, although I had to wake up every day at 4 a.m. to haul garbage to pay my way through college. I knew that learning was the key. My parents, all Korean parents, believed that education was the best way to break that vicious cycle of poverty. These children later became the lead actors in this great drama. Their sweat, their tears is what transformed Korea from being one of the poorest countries in the world to one of the most dynamic today. Our desire for learning continues. Currently, there are more than 100,000 Korean students studying in your schools. These young students will become the leaders of tomorrow. They will become scientists, doctors, bankers, engineers, teachers, and artists. They will continue to contribute to making both of our countries stronger, and they will bring our two countries closer together. Distinguished members, today the United States and Korea have one of the closest, most important economic relationships in the world. For both countries, it has brought untold benefits and opportunities. Our trade in goods, services, and mutual investments has grown dramatically. We invest in you, and you invest in us, because we are interdependent. When we trade together, we grow together. When we build together, we rise together. And when we work together, we win together. We see this in the towns and cities and states this Congress represents. We see it in West Point, Georgia, where a new Kia automotive plant is expected to create 1,400 new businesses and more than 20,000 new jobs nearby. We see it in Midland, Michigan as well, where Dow Chemical, a distinctly American company, and Kochem Engineering, a distinctly Korean company, have joined together to make some of the world's most advanced batteries, the building blocks for a new era of electric vehicles. I understand that Vice President Biden has been to the opening ceremony of this plant. And we have more than 10,000 Korean companies, including global conglomerates such as Samsung and LG, doing business and investing all across America. And of course, we see such cooperation in Korea as well. Just west of Seoul, a GM Korea joint venture is manufacturing and selling Chevrolets to Korean consumers. Sales are up 27% in just the first 6 months since the brand was launched. And 55% of Koreans say they would consider buying one. And our cooperation is not just limited to automobiles. Many others, from microchips to biotech, provide similar examples of such cooperation. Our mutual investment is yet another good example. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, distinguished members of Congress, thanks to all of you in this chamber, our economic ties are becoming even stronger. The Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement was ratified by this Congress here last night. Here, where the Mutual Defense Treaty was signed by Korea and the United States in 1953, a new chapter in our relationship has opened. Our relationship has become stronger. This agreement is a major step toward future growth and job creation. It is a win for our corporations. The Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement will be able to ensure continued growth and also create jobs. And this is a win for our corporations, it is a win for our workers, a win for small businesses, and a win for all the innovators on both sides of the Pacific. Perhaps you have heard what the experts have said, that America's economic output will grow more due to the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement than from America's last 9 trade agreements combined. And that the tariff reductions and many of the labor, fair labor provisions, rigorous environmental standards, and strong protections for intellectual property rights will be beneficial for all of us. These provisions will improve our business environments. These provisions will allow us to widely share the benefits of trade more than ever. In this century, much has changed, but not this basic truth. Open markets build strong economies. And in this 21st century, I firmly believe economies must be green to grow. Unfortunately, this was not always our way. For far too long in my country, growth came at a cost. Rapid economic growth cast a dark shadow in our environment, in the air that we breathe, and the water that we drank. This is why when I was mayor of Seoul, I considered it my calling to restore Seoul's Cheonggyecheon stream, which was neglected for decades. The restored stream revitalized the surrounding landscape. It revived commercial activity and enriched the lives of the people in countless ways. And as president, I announced a new national vision, one of low-carbon, green growth. And it is our goal to become the world's 7th largest green economy by 2020. The benefits of green growth are real. This is why we are investing heavily in the research and development of next-generation power technologies, such as the smart grids. This is why we are trying to become the leader in renewable energy sources. This is why we've required our biggest carbon-emitting companies to set greenhouse gas targets this year, and they will, of course, work to deliver on their promise. I am also aware that the U.S. is also taking measures to ensure a sustainable future. Some of those steps we are taking together. For example, in 2009, our government signed a statement of intention to work together on renewable energy, energy efficiency, and power technologies. The Chicago Smart Building Initiative is a good example of our cooperation between our two countries. And during my visit this time, our two governments signed a statement of intent on the joint research project on clean energy. Joint investments and cooperation will only increase. Our work will lead to tangible results that will benefit mankind. As our countries move down this path, we will be moving even closer together, and we will move forward together. Distinguished members, ladies and gentlemen, the strength of a country is not measured in dollars alone. Our mutual defense keeps us strong and it keeps us safe. Ours is an alliance forged in blood. That is how we Koreans describe our mutual defense treaty. Fifty-eight years ago today, in October 1953, here in Washington, D.C., the Republic of Korea and the United States signed the Mutual Defense Treaty. In the words of that treaty, we pledged our common determination to defend ourselves against external armed attack so that no potential aggressor could be under the illusion that either of us stands alone in the Pacific area. But we know that defending freedom is never easy. It is never free of cost or free of risk. For this, I want to thank you. I thank you on behalf of the Korean people for standing by us. We also want to thank the 28,500 American men and women in uniform who serve today in Korea. We want to thank each and every one of you for keeping faith with the generation of your parents and grandparents defending freedom. On the Korean Peninsula, we thank you for your service. Today, I would also like to thank the Korean War veterans who are here with us today. Their representatives, John Conyers, Charles Rangel, Sam Johnson, and Howard Coble. We thank these gentlemen for their service to these gentlemen and to millions of others. The Korean War or the division of the peninsula are not abstract concepts, and they are not abstract concepts for me either. My older sister and younger brother, both just children, were killed in that war. I will never forget them. I will never forget how my mother tried so hard to keep them alive. With the war raging all around us, there were no doctors, and we couldn't afford to buy medicine. All that my mother could do was to stay up all night and pray to God. Many Koreans still live with such pain. I recognize the reality that Korea has been split in two. But I will never accept it as a permanent condition. The two Koreas share the same language, history, and customs. We are one people. In both Koreas, there are families who have never spoken to their loved ones for more than half a century. And my hope is that these people and all 70 million Koreans will enjoy real happiness and real peace. And for this, we must first lay the foundation for peace on the Korean Peninsula. And upon this foundation, we must strengthen cooperation between the two Koreas. We must seek the path that will lead us towards mutual prosperity, and we must achieve peaceful unification. A unified Korea will be a friend to all and a threat to none. A unified Korea will contribute to peace and prosperity not only in Northeast Asia, but far beyond. We therefore must achieve the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And North Korea must give up their nuclear ambitions. Korea and the United States stand united. We are in full agreement that the six-party talks is an effective way to achieve tangible progress. We are in full agreement that we must also pursue dialogue with North Korea. However, we must also maintain our principled approach. A North Korea policy that is firmly rooted upon such principles is the key that will allow us to ultimately and fundamentally resolve this issue. North Korea's development is in our collective interest, and this is what we want. However, this depends on its willingness to end all provocations and make genuine peace. We will work with you and the international community so that North Korea makes the right choice. Our mutual defense treaty has ensured stability and prosperity to flourish not only on the Korean Peninsula but across Northeast Asia. Northeast Asia today is a more dynamic region than ever. And economic change in this region brings geopolitical change. and it brings shifts in the balance of power that has long prevailed. The United States, as a key player of the Asia-Pacific region and as a global leader, has vital interests in Northeast Asia. For Northeast Asia to play a more constructive role in global affairs, there must be peace and stability in the region. And your leadership that has ensured peace and stability of Northeast Asia and beyond in the 20th century must remain supreme in the 21st century. The ideals that you represent and the leadership that allows for such ideals to become true must continue. There remain many challenges in the world today, and your leadership is vital. Terrorism, proliferation of WMD, climate change, energy, poverty, and disease. These are just a few of the challenges that require your leadership. Our free trade agreement has significance because it will be a force for stability. Because lasting stability, again, depends on economic opportunity being open and robust. Our relationship can be the catalyst that generates growth and stability all along the Pacific Rim, and in doing so, it will make clear how fully our fates are connected. More than ever, Korea is looking beyond the horizon. It will willingly embrace its international responsibilities. It will work to resolve global challenges. And since becoming President of Korea, my vision for Korea in the coming decades is for global Korea. Global Korea has joined United Nations peacekeeping operations in East Timor, Lebanon, and Haiti. Korea was the third largest contributor of troops to the coalition forces in Iraq. We have sent reconstruction teams to rebuild Afghanistan. Our naval vessels support the United States and EU in fighting against piracy off the coast of Somalia. We will take part in the international effort in bringing democracy to Libya and rebuilding its shattered economy. And we have pledged to double our overseas development assistance by 2015, and next month, the high-level forum on aid effectiveness will be held in Busan, Korea's second largest city. In these and countless other ways, Korea will carry out its duties as a responsible member of the international community. As we face the many global challenges that lie ahead, we will promote universal values. In 2009, when President Obama and I signed the joint vision for the future of the alliance, we agreed to work closely together in resolving regional and international issues based on shared values and mutual trust. And during our summit today, we renewed this commitment. We also reaffirmed our commitment to face the challenges of today for the generation of tomorrow. Our alliance will grow, and it will continue to evolve, and it will prevail. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, distinguished members of Congress, Before I part, I want to thank you again for the honor of addressing this Congress. I would also like to thank President Obama and Mrs. Obama for their invitation. I also take this opportunity to pay tribute to the 1.5 million Korean-Americans who have been contributing to this great country. As President of Korea, I'm proud that they're giving back to the country that gave them so much. I am also deeply grateful to you and the American people for giving them the chance to make their dreams come true. Your ideals and aspirations have been ours, as they have been for much of the world. Half a century ago, young Americans served in the Korean War for duty beyond the seas. And today, our peoples hear the same call. It may not always be active combat, not always to brave the rugged mountains or bitter winters, but it is an important duty nonetheless, a charge to help create a more peaceful, more prosperous world. In the 21st century, duty and destiny calls us once again. And as before, let us rise to meet these challenges. Let us go together, together and forward.
God bless you.
Thank you.
God bless America. Thank you.
Purpose of the joint meeting having been completed, the chair declares that the joint meeting of the two houses is now dissolved. The House will continue in recess subject to the call of the chair until 5:15 p.m. today.